You're listening to Season 1 of Teaching Yoga, a podcast by me, Cora Giroux. I believe yoga teachers are on the front line of health and healing in the Western world, so I created this podcast to support the people that support the people. Each week, we cover topics that matter to you, like inclusivity, accessibility, and diversity, how to make a sustainable living doing this work, and how we as teachers can be a positive voice in the changing landscape of yoga. This show is a space for real, raw conversation, a place to remind you that you're not alone, and a resource for your life and work on the spiritual path. If you want to stay connected between shows, find me on Instagram. It's just my name, Coragerouex.
I haven't yet, yeah. We had to bet. I'm only here, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
If you don't like this music, then don't be listening to it, you know. I'm just a dude that you know, or something similar. If you don't keep it real, can you go somewhere?
Hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Teaching Yoga podcast. And if you're a regular listener or you follow along on Instagram with me, you will know that for the last 2 weeks, I was actually unable to put out a new episode. And that wasn't for lack of having interviews that have been done or not having a guest to connect with. In fact, it was just the sheer volume of work that it takes to put into an episode once it's recorded, to actually edit it and do all the post-production and everything that's associated with that and actually release the episode out into the world. Many of you know that as a podcaster, there's no revenue stream tied to producing this show, which is not something that I'm terribly concerned with because I do it because I fucking love it. It is one of my biggest passions in life to be able to connect with other people in the yoga industry, talk to people who know way more than I do, and ask them all of my questions and then put it out there. And hopefully it benefits other people. It just seems like it's a massive win-win situation for me and hopefully for you guys too. But the reason I bring up the finances is just that it means I have to do a lot of other work in order to pay my bills so that I can just, you know, do the things that normal people do, like pay their student loans and buy food, that sort of shit. So that just comes into conflict, I guess, with the amount of time that it actually takes to produce a show. So after the interview is complete, after I've already organized with the guest, done the interview, sent them my questions, done all my research, all of that sort of stuff, what happens after takes me about 12 hours. I've timed it. Some weeks it's just my paid employment, or in the last 2 weeks, my paid employment has just taken precedent just because I have obligations that I have to meet and the workload was a little bit higher. So I wasn't actually able to get the podcast out. But the show is really important to me. In fact, it's one of the most important things to me in terms of my professional life at the moment. So not putting it out is just not a good option for me. So it took me a while to figure this out, but I actually have decided to get help. Okay. But it did take me a while to actually think that it was okay to ask for help and to reach out and to look at outsourcing some of the podcast. So this is the first episode where I won't actually be doing the post-production. So what that means for you guys is that hopefully we'll have even better post-production, better sound quality, better editing, but also that getting the podcast out on a weekly basis will, fingers crossed, be more sustainable and be more realistic, just considering the rest of the life that I have that requires my time and attention as well. So just FYI, we'll be back to our regular schedule. Thanks for waiting and being patient with this episode coming out. And I will continue to see you every week. And one way, if you're enjoying the show and you're like, oh, I get a lot of value out of this, it's a free resource that I use for my teaching. Oftentimes podcasts have something called a Patreon setup, which is just basically a way that listeners can support the show financially through a small contribution. Usually it's a monthly contribution. And because I never do anything the easy way, I've decided to set up a membership group for yoga teachers that if you're interested in supporting the show, you could sign up to be a member of the Teachers Club. We launched the Teachers Club on March 24th, and it will be a small group to start. We've got 24 people signed up on the waitlist right now, so it's not going to be a huge group in the beginning. But if you're one of the founding members of the Teachers Club, you get a cheaper price. So I will recognize that you're taking a risk on me and the community because it's brand new and we'll build the community together. So I will take feedback and input from you guys, the people who join the Teachers Club in the beginning, and we will create the kind of community that we want to create as a group. So rather than me being a dictator, it will be a two-way conversation. However, I will hold the responsibility of keeping the group together, setting some guidelines, and make some suggestions for what I think would be useful. So the Teachers Club will include two group virtual circles, is what I'm calling them. It's basically a Zoom call that we'll get on twice a month together. We can use it as a format for Q&A if you want to ask me any questions, but we can also use it just as a way to discuss and share, you know, the things that we need to discuss and share as yoga teachers, because often it can be quite an isolated kind of solo soul trader situation. So the Teachers Club, the virtual calls that we'll do them twice a month. I'll figure out a good time to have those just based on the time zone of the people who join us. There will also be a workshop that I'll create every month. The first workshop will be on how to create a culture of consent in your yoga classes. Once you're inside of the Teachers Club, I will 100% take suggestions on which workshops you guys would like me to create, and even if there's a special guest that you want to see inside of the Teachers Club. There will also be a weekly email that goes out. It's similar to my weekly or my yoga newsletter that I sent out at the beginning of February. So it will just keep you up to date about what's going on in the yoga community. And it does have a lens of accessibility, inclusivity, representation, you know, what's going on with all of the numerous sexual assault situations that we've had in the yoga community. It does have a lens leaning towards social justice, but we also cover things like tech developments and things that are happening in the industry as a whole. So part of the Teachers Club will be that weekly newsletter, the two group calls that we'll do every month, the workshop, and there will be a community forum for you guys to all interact with each other, and I'll be in there as well. So if you are interested in becoming a founding member of the Teachers Club, sign yourself up on the waitlist. The best way to do that right now is just to go to my website, coragiroux.com/the Teachers Club waitlist. So the doors will open on the 24th of March, as I've mentioned, which is when we'll get started shortly after that. But for now, you just put yourself on the waitlist. There's no obligation if you're on that list, but it just means that you will get the direct communication from me first. About when you can actually sign up and what that process will look like. For founding members, it'll be $19 a month. If you're interested in being a part of the Teachers Club, but for whatever reason, $19 a month is not accessible to you, you just send me an email. We will make it work. I mean, I have been in your situation so many times that that I will not turn people away for financial reasons. So if you want to be in the club, $19 a month is not doable. You just send me an email. My email's on the website. We'll figure out a different way that you can be a part of the club. Okay, enough from me on that. Today on the show, I talk with Myra Lewin. And even though that name may not be familiar to you, you may know Myra through her center, which is called Hale Pule. So Myra is the founder and the director of Hale Pule, which is a yoga and Ayurveda training center. It's an organic farm, and it's a space for healing. When I first learned about Myra and Hale Pule, it was they had their center in Hawaii, and I had it on my bucket list to do their Ayurvedic chef training in Hawaii. Like, it was like my, oh, when I when I win the lottery, or like when my life is in a place where that's something that's accessible to me, I will definitely do that. I have no intention of being a chef, but I would do it for my own personal reasons. But much to my delight, Myra has actually moved her business, Halepule, to New Zealand. And that's super exciting because, I mean, she's closer to me. So totally selfish reason. But Myra also has lots of virtual offerings. She's got a podcast, which is how I first heard of her, called Everyday Ayurveda and Yoga. And she covers a lot of really great topics about Ayurveda. If you're interested in learning more, definitely check that out. So I think, as far as you can tell in the interview, Myra is someone that I really admire, because as far as I can see, she runs an incredibly successful business, yet truly lives the principles of Ayurveda and yoga. She has been practicing and teaching for nearly 30 years. She's the author of 2 books, one, Freedom in Your Relationship to Food, and Simple Ayurvedic Recipes. Halepule, her business, is also a training and a teaching space, and each year Myra leads numerous professional trainings in yoga and Ayurveda. However, I was most excited to speak to Myra about how yoga and Ayurveda can help us age with grace. So Myra and I speak about her personal approach to aging well, and the role that Agni plays in the aging process. And if you're familiar with Ayurveda, you'll probably be familiar with Agni. But if not, don't worry, we actually define it in the show. We also discuss the 5 main things that disrupt Agni. And one of them I was like super surprised about and had never heard of before. So hopefully, even if you are familiar with Ayurveda, you get a little bit of new information about that. And we also talk about how to avoid those things that disrupt having a healthy Agni. Myra also spent quite a bit of time on speaking about how to get clear on your priorities and how that will help you create a sattvic life. I know that anytime I interview someone that I consider an elder in our yoga community, I really like to ask them about some of the problems and issues that I see people of my generation or the younger generation. I'm an elder millennial, by the way. If you don't know that term, look it up. It's one of my favorite ones. Some of the issues that we're going through right now in the yoga industry, and people who have been in the industry for like decades plus, it's really inspiring for me to talk to them and ask them like, hey, these are the things that I'm struggling with. What do I do? or how have you worked through this? So Myra and I talk a lot about, you know, starting out in the yoga industry and what to do when you feel like your life as a yoga teacher is at odds with the principles of yoga and Ayurveda. So I hope you enjoy my interview and discussion with Myra Lewin. Hey, Myra, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Great. Thank you, Cora, for having me.
I've been following your work, as I sort of said just a minute ago, for quite a long time. And I think a lot of the teachers who listen to this show will be familiar with you. I mean, you've been podcasting and blogging for quite a long time. But just in case people haven't heard of you, would you mind just giving us a little bit of background on what you do? And then my personal question is, could you talk a bit about relocating your home and your business from Hawaii to New Zealand?
Yes, I started Halepule in 1999 and in Hawaii. And in 2019, we did move to New Zealand. It's been a very exciting time for us. But back to the beginning, the name Halepule is in Hawaiian, and it means a house of prayer. And our goal is really to provide opportunities for healing and for expansion in life. And we give Ayurveda and yoga consultations. We do treatments and trainings. We do them in person as well as online. My goal also is to spread Ayurveda and yoga, that it's such a wonderful foundation for living. And but for us to also to train other people to be able to go out and share so that we can empower people in life. And we moved to New Zealand because so that we could have a little more freedom in doing the work that we do, because we have clients from all over the world. And New Zealanders they're warm and welcoming, and the nature here is really fantastic. So these are all really important points that we see in Ayurveda, in other words, in being able to have some connection to nature, you know, as the science of living, that's part of it.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when you were in Hawaii, you actually had like a farm as well.
Yes.
While you were like, you were growing, because I've heard you talk about like growing this and growing that. So did you buy a farm when you moved to New Zealand, or are you starting from scratch? Like, that just seems like such a huge undertaking to move that kind of life.
It actually is quite an undertaking. And you know, probably thanks to the New Zealand government, we've had to wait a little bit to purchase a property. And in that process, I can say that it's probably a good thing, because we've learned a lot more about the area and that. But yes, we will have a property. As to how large the farming activity will be, we'll just see. It'll definitely be a minimum of our growing all our own food as much as possible. I have a plan. My plan is we'll be growing heirloom roses extensively and making elixirs and using them, also using the roses in our formulas and for healing purposes.
It just sounds like it gets better and better. Like, your Ayurvedic chef training is on my bucket list of things to do in life. I have no desire to be a chef or cook professionally, but for my own family and my own personal life and understanding and just pleasure, like it just seems like the pleasure of knowing that information.
It really does. It, you know, it adds so much richness to life, because, you know, food is something, it's from nature, and it's something we do three times a day. You know, it's meant to be a big part of our life, not to take it over, but it's that it's an integral part of our connecting with nature and connecting with each other. Yeah, the training is a whole lot of fun. It's actually full for this year, but we're having a list. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be. I mean, when I read about it, I was like, one day I'll put that in my thing, because it just sounds incredible. And to know that you might be growing heirloom, or you hopefully will be growing heirloom roses as well. It's just like, I'm not sure how that could get any better.
Yeah. We couldn't wait. We already have, about 30 plants going in baskets right now. So.
Wow. So like on that note, my partner and I are planning, we're saving up to move out to the country as well, to not do the same thing that you're doing, but to have a life that is more connected to nature and more connected to the land. And we're a couple of years off from that. And so we've got our plans and our budgets and all of that happening. But our life in the meantime, and his a little bit, but mine even more so, seems almost like at odds with how I would like to be living and how I imagine like the ideal Ayurvedic lifestyle is. And one of the things that has always stuck with me is I've been teaching yoga, like asana, for about 10 years. So I've had a lot of conversations with other yoga teachers about this very topic, that the lives that we are living as modern yoga teachers, asana teachers, is almost like the opposite of what Ayurveda suggests, and I've experienced, like, and when I have had moments of time in my life where I can follow the principles of Ayurveda, like waking at the same time, eating at the same time, you know, eating mindfully, those things, I feel like a different person. So I'm 100% convinced that I want to live that way. But what do I do with, like, because especially as a yoga teacher, sometimes you teach like 6 a.m. class, and then you teach lunchtime class, and then you teach maybe an evening class. So like meal times and sleep times get really disjointed and irregular.
Right.
And sometimes I wonder, it's like, I used to do this, go back and forth. Like, do I wake up at 4 a.m. every day because that's the earliest time I have to wake up? But then I end up being sleep deprived. Or do I let myself have an irregular schedule? I know it's not like a clear-cut question, but I guess it's like, how do we live Ayurveda when the rest of life is asking us to do the opposite?
Yes. Well, the first step is really to recognize, do you want to bring Ayurveda and yoga in as the foundation of your life, or do you want to just try to stick it into what you're already doing?
Where it fits.
Yeah. And so two different things. But a couple of things about that. You know, if you can make a regular irregular schedule, in other words, if it goes morning and evening, this is really not ideal. I mean, because we really, you know, whatever you're doing at night, probably we ought not to be doing it at night. There's that kapha time of day from 6 to 10 p.m. We need to be slowing down. That's the time to be doing less. But your question about, you know, getting up at 4 a.m., well, generally, I would say yes. Mostly you get yourself up before 6. You know, ideally, again, it's going to be better if it's regular because it's going to keep vata dosha calm. And this is the biggest problem, you know, in society these days, honestly, is that we have so many vata-provoking activities and schedules and travel and all of these things, as well as looking at screens and that have flickering in them that aggravate vata. So all of these things put together makes it even more difficult to be able to tolerate that kind of thing. It should be regular schedules. And, you know, people who work for themselves, I find myself often saying to them, wait a minute, who's in charge of your schedule? And so if you are, then you need to take care of yourself and there's nobody else. If you're working for other people, you know, then you have to really keep working yourself back to having, you know, if you're going to work every Tuesday evening, that it's every Tuesday, that it's not Thursday some weeks and Friday another. You know, that kind of irregularity or people who, I think people in the medical industry, you know, that have these rotating schedules. This is one of the worst things you can do for your health. So with teachers, what I would say is that make sure that you're not making decisions out of fear. In other words, oh, I'm afraid I won't have any work or I won't have money or whatever. We need to really move away from that because those decisions don't work well for us. They'll always bring us more suffering in the long run. So finding, you know, backing up in that process, finding a piece that's regular, and then adding regularity to that as you can is really the best way. You know, even if it means you have to do a little bit of something else in the interim, if you know what I mean, meaning another, if you have another part-time job or something of that nature. But the other thing too is that you know, with if you're going to be a teacher, then you want to be an example. You want to do things that make you feel good about yourself and that inspires other people. So, you know, I've watched the commercialization of yoga over the last 30 years. And I remember in the beginning, my saying to my teachers, you know, I was complaining about they're doing this and they're doing that. Can you believe it? You know, she reminded me just to stay focused on what I'm doing. And that's what I would suggest is that, you know, what to really look at what you really want as a teacher and then just stay focused on that. And then, yeah, in the beginning, we have to try some different things to find out what's really true for us. And then to really work from the inside out with it, you know, in other words, how can I be at peace and do this? And then I have something really great to offer. But, you know, we know that the ahara, the diet, and vihara, the lifestyle, you know, it's an extremely significant part of yoga as well as Ayurveda. So in Ayurveda, then, we recognize that it's about our choices. And so we're looking to bring balance so that we can have yoga, the union of body, mind, and spirit. And that's actually when we're most productive, where we feel the best, and then we have the most fun. And that's, as I look at it, that's when we can truly be love, whether it's being a yoga teacher, being a mother, being a partner, any of those things. It's so we really need to keep bringing ourselves back to that. And it's not about being perfect at all. You know, this has been a gradual change for me in many ways over the years. But as I keep refining, it just gets better. That's the real key.
Yeah. Mara, I think like you hit the nail on the head for me personally when you said like we need to not make our choices out of fear. And I know I'm not alone in that because when I talk to other teachers, we are sharing the same sentiment that it feels like if I don't take this class, I won't be able to, you know, pay my bills. Or if I don't take this class, I won't get another one. Or if I, you know, it's making decisions that we wouldn't make if fear wasn't a part of it. And like, I know maybe this is not why I asked you to come on to talk about this specifically, but like, do you have any advice or guidance around shifting that mindset? Because I think it's something that's really prevalent in the industry, especially because it is like it's almost like a freelance industry where you get like bits and pieces. So there's not a lot of security. So fear is a big part of it for a lot of people.
Well, one of the big things is that we have to kind of go back to what's talked about in yoga and Ayurveda, which is that, you know, we set our intentions, or you can say that, you know, we create our tomorrow with what we think today. So one of the things that I ask people to do is to make sure that you're very clear about your priorities in life, you know, whether it's three of them or five of them, main ones. And I have people write that down and then keep that in front of you and don't do anything that's not in that priority. Now, you might say, well, one of my priorities is I want to be a yoga teacher. Well, then you start creating in your mind how you would like that to be, and not just kind of going out and letting the environment dictate you. Now, granted, again, when you're brand new, you know, you try some different things and then you find out. And that's a good thing, but that shouldn't go on for a long time. You know, you don't want people to get to know you, and then you get to know what it's like being a teacher. How do I want it to be? Because if we don't ask ourselves that question regularly, then you're not going to go to the depth that's going to bring you any joy in the process. And that's when people burn out, you know, then they get bored with it or whatever. And this is something I was told, and it made sense to me, which is that you can only teach to the depth of your own practice. You know, as you have to have that balance in order for your teaching to really progress. And, you know, that's one of the fun things that I did for about 15 years was I had, you know, a group of students that went with me, and I still have many of them today, actually. And that's really a great thing. And over time, you may work together on different levels, you know, and that, but there's a relationship there. And, you know, that's really what life is about, right? It's our relationship we learn to have with ourselves and with others, and that helps us to have our relationship with ourselves. But, you know, it's that spiritual basis that helps us step away from the fear, and also keeping Vata dosha calm. Yeah, because when Vata gets high, it's, you know, it's easy. The mind gets a little bit twisted. It's not clear.
Yeah. Thanks for that. And I feel like that's useful and practical, because if you're struggling with that sort of sense of fear or insecurity or making decisions out of fear, you could work with pacifying Vata, and then it may be easier to work with the fear.
Exactly. Definitely it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. That seems really like a really practical thing we could do if we were in that situation.
Now, how you would do that would be, you know, let's say, okay, so you have an irregular schedule. Well, you make it as regularly irregular as possible, you know, and just have regular eating and sleeping. Those two things alone make such a big difference. And you just do the best you can. But one of the things that happens when Vata gets high is that we'll tend to look at a situation, and if it feels like too much or whatever, we just, as they say, throw it to the wind. And so that's where you have to really recognize, oh, okay, so my Vata is a little high. I need to really turn away from those strong feelings I might have to just throw things out the window and do whatever.
Yeah. Pacifying Vata is a constant and perpetual friend in my life, I think. Mara, one of the things that stood out to me most about you when I first began engaging with your work, like I first found you through the podcast. So I saw your image on the, I don't know what you call it, like the profile picture or whatever for the podcast. But then I started looking at your blog and your website and all sorts of different things. And I mean, this is probably weird. I hope it's not, but like I showed a photo of you to my partner last night. Uh-huh. And I said, look who I'm interviewing tomorrow. In my mind, you're like one of the people who is an example on how I would like to age. And I described it to my partner. It was like, I was like, look how beautiful she is. And the images or the role models that we have right now, or that I see around me for aging, are one of two things. It's like you get older and you get unwell, or you get older and you get a lot of plastic surgery and Botox. And neither of those things seems appealing to me. So, and my friends and I talk about it, and like the lady who, you know, the mutual connection that you and I have, Tara, we both joke that like Myra's who I want to be when I grow up. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, can you talk to us about how Ayurveda sees the aging process, and how maybe even just you as a person see the aging process?
Yeah, sure. It's fun. It's something I really like to talk about, because it's really what Ayurveda is all about. You know, it's a science and it's an art. And as I mentioned, it's all about our choices, but it's also a way of looking at life, you know, because the aging process starts the moment we're born. And certainly to about age 20 or so, we're in the coffin time of life and we're growing and that. But then, you know, then it's all a matter of what am I doing? So everything that we expose ourselves to, our five senses, just everything about us, anything we expose ourselves to creates an impression, and it affects the aging process. So waiting until you're 50 to think about it is not a great idea. And I'd have to say that, you know, part of it is that I grew up in my parents were not from the United States. One was from Russia and the other was from Ireland. And they were kind of old country kind of people. And although they wanted us to be, you know, they wanted us to be free in the United States, but they kept things really simple in life. And I think this is one of the messages I'd send out today, which is, you know, you keep it simple and it goes really well. You know, I didn't grow up on sugar and things like that, so I had that to my advantage. But I'd have to say that I did a lot of hard living in my early days. And when I came to yoga, I was fortunate. I was taught pranayama right away. And I have to say that pranayama has been one of the things that has made an enormous difference in the aging process, because it keeps me in touch with my life force, and that there's always meditation to go with it. Some in the early days, it was 5 minutes. You know, I was told you have to do at least five, and that's all I could do in the beginning. So there's those things. But what I've really learned is that the more I stay in touch with myself and not worry about what other people are thinking or doing, then it's just the allowing the expression of who I am as spirit. You know, I do things that I get a little nervous about and all kinds of things like that. But if I just look at everything in life as an opportunity for me to grow, you know, that the challenges are something that I look forward to as opposed to running away from. And, you know, I have to say that moving my business and myself to New Zealand, as much as I wanted to do it, was not an easy thing. It definitely took me to the edge on some things, and I learned a little more about myself, and I also learned a lot about my limits at this point. So I think I flew in 12 months, I flew just under 100,000 miles.
Oh, wow.
As well as moving. And normally I don't do that at all. And that's something that I don't recommend to anybody. I won't do it again. But it was just something that was part of a process. It's sort of like what we're talking about, you know, teachers in the beginning, and they've got to, you know, well, you feel like you've got to take something. Well, okay, so you take something for a period of time, but then you make sure that's a temporary thing. But, you know, I don't think about aging very often at all. I think when I started to get a little bit of white hair when I was just maybe 41 or so. And I remember kind of having a lot of thoughts about it at that time. And when I wrote the manual for and did all the recording for our health counselor, Ayurveda health counselor course, definitely my hair turned more white during. So I think the big thing is cause and effect, is your attention. And, you know, people who are in their 20s, for example, and are walking around eating really bad food and not taking care of themselves and thinking they're having fun, well, you know, everybody gets to decide for themselves, but you really have to ask yourself, is this really fun? And is it, am I willing to take the consequences? Because if you do something, if you eat something or do something that makes you feel terrible afterwards, and then you keep doing it, that's actually, you're breeding a ground for addiction in that sense. Because the mind will go to that habit of compulsion, of turning away from the supposed discomfort that we're covering up with trying to have fun. Did that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. I've experienced that cycle in my life. So yeah, made total sense.
Yeah. And in Ayurveda and yoga, we have good understanding and explanation for that and how to work our way out of that. So, you know, those are the things I think that age people tremendously. And I guess I've been walking along doing my own life for a long time now. And I sometimes now I have clients, you know, that are 50 years old and have so many problems. And I, you know, we're really not meant to suffer that much. But, you know, it's a great thing because even in, I have clients in their 70s that, you know, will start making changes and get tremendous results. So it's never too late. But, you know, that the one of the turning points for me too is when I was, I guess I was in the late 50s, I started to notice that I couldn't carry half of my body weight anymore. and I had, didn't have some tendency to do a little too much. And that's something that I, in Ayurveda, you know, that I've learned about, but I had to do it myself to see, was that, you know, some people's constitution is stronger than others. Some's a little more delicate than others. And so I don't carry my half my body weight anymore. But, you know, I do lots of things that I can really enjoy today. You know, we've done some tremendous hiking around here recently. And it's a great thing to be able to be mobile. That's what I talk to people about, you know, and whether you're in your teens or 20s or 30s or whatever, is that, you know, how do you want to feel? Do you want to be not able to move when you're 50 and 60 years old? That's no fun. And so you have to weigh those things out and see, is it worth it to me or not? But smiling and laughing often is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for sharing all of that. It's great to hear that you don't even think about it very much. And I think that would be the ideal situation, right? Because it's not drawing your, like you're not experiencing all of those health problems or pain in a way that is occupying a great deal of your attention.
I think the other thing too is that is to recognize how our society, somewhere along the line here in the last 50 years, definitely got very attached to young is better. But when I was a kid, I don't know. I mean, we looked at older people not as something decrepit, but just as older people, you know. And so I think that our thinking needs to change too, to recognize that the beauty really comes from the inside. You know, it's when Agni is strong, our digestive fire, Agni, then the eyes are bright. And, you know, and that's a huge, huge factor in terms of, you know, how you might walk up and see somebody and think about, you know, who are they? Who is this person versus, oh, wow, that person looks really old. You know what I mean? You know, when we get kind of dull and gray in the eyes, you know, we can be 30 and look 50.
Yeah. And Agni was something that, like, when I've been listening to, because you've got some episodes about, you know, aging well on your podcast, and you've spoken about it and written about it before. And Agni was one of the things that you said is like the key, one of the keys to aging with grace. Because most of the people who listen to the show are yoga teachers, I feel like a lot of them would be familiar with the term. But just in case they're not, would you mind just like defining that? And then also even like giving us signs of like, how would we know if our Agni is working well or not as much?
Okay, sure. The Agni is, think of it as the energy that's available to transform anything that you consume. So that would be anything you consume through your five senses, what anything you look at, listen to, put in your mouth, put on your skin, and what you expose your nose and your sense of smell to. So it's not just about digesting food, although that's a big part, it's about digesting life. So if I go into if I have areas of big resistance in my life, it's going to disturb my ability to digest food and vice versa. So that this Agni then, we also have, think of it like a campfire. You take care of it, you give it a little fuel and a little bit of air, and it gets bigger and you throw sand on it and it smolders and doesn't work very well. So we can think of it like that. And things that make it smolder are, one is resistance, like I just mentioned. But other things are not chewing your food thoroughly so that there's no solids, and eating between meals, snacking or grazing. Those are two of the most damaging things that you can do. And the way you know is things like, well, you can have burping and belching and things of that nature, but also if you don't sweat, an indication that the Agni is weak. And then there are various states of imbalance of the Agni, so that, sometimes it'll be that just feels like things digest really slowly. They stay in there too long, Oh, yes. And another thing that is really, really damaging for Agni is to eat and go to bed.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because think about it. It's very practical. When you go to sleep, we haven't been taught to think this way, but it's just the practicality of the physical life. You go to sleep and your energy gets pulled away from the body. So it gets pulled away from the digestive process. The same thing if you go, maybe you've heard, don't go swimming right after eating.
Yeah.
It's not just because you might drown. It's because the energy, because of the cool water, is going to get pulled away from the digestive process and the food won't digest properly. So it's that kind of a thing. So that's why you'll hear you shouldn't have, don't eat and have sex within 2 hours on either side.
Haven't heard that either. Interesting.
and so they're actually quite significant, because the thing to remember is that, okay, so then Agni got weakened for that, and that meal didn't digest well. But now Agni is weak for the next meal, unless you can do something that will help it along. Now you're not going to digest the next meal very well. And this is why people get really confused and want to blame the food. And then there's this inconsistency, because it's normally not the food. Typically it's not. It's just that food's being eaten at a time when you can't handle it. And heavier food then, becomes a bigger problem, because it is a little more challenging to digest.
I have a few questions about what you've said. The first one is not eating and going to bed. So the way my life is right now, there are 2 days out of the week where I get home around 9 o'clock at night from work, but I can't eat my dinner at work. So I've gone back and forth between two things. One is just not having dinner that night. And that seems to work fairly well, but I was seeing an Ayurvedic doctor a couple of years ago, and she mentioned that, for me personally, fasting for really long periods of time might not be such a good idea for Vata. So that was one camp. But then sometimes I will eat dinner when I get home. And I mean, I guess I'm answering my own question. I don't feel great after I do that, because I go to bed fairly early. Like, I'm in bed within half an hour to an hour after that. So what would Ayurveda not prescribe, but what would it suggest if that's sort of your life circumstance for the moment?
Okay, so let's assume that it's not every night like that, that it's one night a week or something. Then what I would suggest would be to have a cup of milk or something of that nature. And the other thing would be to attempt to take 5 minutes at least and have something small at 5 or 6 o'clock. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what I would do. I would not eat. It's not ever going to be a good thing. And no, it's not a great idea to have extended fasting. I know it's a very fashionable thing these days on the internet. And, if you eat your dinner around 5 or 6 o'clock and then you go to bed sometime before 10, then you'll eat breakfast the next day, maybe 7:30 or 7 o'clock,
yep,
something, then that's great. You get a fast every day, but it's not too much. If you just keep skipping dinner, if you were doing that repeatedly, then Agni is going to get weaker because it's not being fed enough. And that will also, Agni and Vata have a very special relationship. They like to push on each other and trip each other, you might say. So when one goes out of balance, the other, it will help the other one go out of balance too. So,
okay, thank you. That's helpful. And then no sex? And you said two hours either side. What does the either side mean? Before
or after, doesn't matter. In other words, you don't want food in that initial place of digestion beforehand, right? But then see what after, because when you're sexually active, the energy is drawn into the sexual organs. And so it's pulled away from Agni. So the food's not going to digest well. So if you wait a couple of hours afterwards, things even out again, and then it's time to have something to eat.
That's good to know. My boyfriend listens to all of these podcast episodes, and I and I don't feel like it after eating, but that's just because I'm like, oh, I feel a bit bloated or whatever, and I just need some time. But now I have a proper reason behind my choices. Okay, cool. Thank you. I've never heard that, and I'm really, really happy to know. One of the things that you mentioned is a really big struggle for me, which is chewing my food enough. And I've known about this for a long time. So it's not like I just learned about it. My best friend studied nutrition, holistic nutrition, maybe like 10 years ago. And they told her, if you get one thing out of this degree, chew your food.
Yeah.
I find it so hard to implement, or almost like I don't enjoy my meal as much. Like, do you have any suggestions on if someone else is struggling with that? Like, how do we change our mindset around chewing our food?
Well, I think it has to do with changing the mindset around having a meal or the whole process of eating.
Okay, cool.
So the first thing is to allow your transformation of your attitude about eating. So when I sit down, that I'm there to commune with nature. I mean, the food hopefully comes from nature. And there's an intelligence in the plants. And so we'd really like to be able to connect with that. And in order to do that, all we really have to do is just be present. So saying a prayer, chanting a mantra, even just a statement of appreciation, what that does on the cellular level is it opens things up. And as I mentioned, each of the cells in your body has an Agni. And we want that Agni to be available so that when you eat, that you'll be able to digest things. Now, the other thing too is that sometimes it helps to remember that when you chew, you mix the food with your saliva. And this is absolutely required in order to initiate the enzymes that get the digestive process going. And so if you don't chew, then those digestive enzymes are not there. And, before the late 1970s, there wasn't such thing as digestive enzymes as a supplement.
Right.
Yeah. So allowing that chewing, you can appeal to your common sense there, it's like, oh, yeah, it's got to happen. Otherwise, I get a stomach ache. So for me, it was very difficult. Oh, my.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Glad I'm not the only one.
In the years prior to my coming to Ayurveda, I remember having these conversations with friends and talking about, because they would tell me, Mari, you eat too fast. And that's why you have gas, because you're swallowing all this air and that kind of thing. And whether or not that was correct, they were correct in that I was eating too fast. And then it really wasn't until I came to Ayurveda that I remembered my mother always saying to me, chew your food, you'll have a stomach ache, And in the beginning, I had to count, and I have to say every now and then, I have to go back to it if I feel a little bit anxious, it can happen sometimes. But mostly what I do now is I base it on that nothing solid goes down my throat. For me, that also meant that I had to take smaller bites because my bites are big. And that also that I actually think about enjoying the tastes. And in Ayurveda, then we want all six tastes in every meal, and that's what has us feel satisfied. And when you have a nice balance of that and cooked it with a little, some spices and some ghee, for example, that you have this harmony that's going on. And there's a part of us that appeals to that's, I don't know, that's very difficult for me to describe. That's something that I would appeal to you to look for there, because when it's there, then I automatically chew enough now. But for a long time, I had to chew, okay, it's got to be at least 20. And for most food, it probably does need to be around there. And some things would be less and some things would be more. But, one of the things that is when smoothies and things like that came out, oh my goodness, you would never put that much food into your body at one time. Agni can't handle it. But also people just throw it down their throat and then it doesn't digest that well. Yeah. So if you have a soup, let's say, or if you're having some juice or something like that, then, hold it in your mouth for just a few seconds. And then I always have to ask myself, one of the things that I was taught in the beginning to ask myself is, where are you in such a hurry to go? And then when I laugh, then I can relax.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to hear that you struggled with it too. Not happy to hear that you struggled, but that I'm not the only one, because my friend who did do that degree, she eats very slowly and has implemented it and lives by it and has done so for the last however many years. But it's nice to hear your process of convincing yourself and retraining your body. It's almost like, for me, it's like an automatic thing that I almost don't have control over unless I'm really, really focused on it. But it's nice to hear that that can shift like anything.
It can. It is. It's just bringing a new level of consciousness to the process. Yeah. And for me, I had a lot of samskara or impressions from my growing up, and I would get uncomfortable, at the dining table because I had some siblings that fought with each other and things like that. So, they're just all of my response to those things. And so it's a great opportunity for clearing out some of those old samskara.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember my mom always cooked enough food, but I had a hungry family. So it was always like, you have to eat it really quickly or you might not have it all. Someone might say like, oh, are you not finished with that? I'll take it. And so I definitely know that there's some childhood programming that could be undone for sure. I'm really happy to know that there are those, ways that you think about Agni and the aging process. And if there's anything that we haven't covered in terms of like your thought process around aging and aging well, like if you could go back to your like 30-year-old self and express something to her about like the way she was living or some sort of like sage advice to your younger self about that, what would it be?
The first one would be, don't make decisions out of fear.
Yeah, that's so good.
And the other one would be, everything matters. In other words,
right?
That I think there were many times in my life that I did things that made me feel bad afterwards. And not just, I went and drank alcohol and I felt bad afterwards. But, sometimes I would not be considerate of my friends and things like that. And, and to remember that all of those things have a much bigger impact than just the event. They create some of those samskara. And so the idea that learning about myself, and I always thought relationships were important, but I had a very small view of how those relationships should happen. So learning how to expand my view of things, that I think thinking longer term and thinking in a bigger way. And, sometimes when you're young and that seems kind of scary, or we feel like, I can only handle this much. And the thing is that we really, as younger people, we have our broadest view unless we have something like Ayurveda and yoga to keep us expanding and opening. Otherwise, what do? We start closing and reducing things. So I would tell that 30-year-old to don't sweat the small stuff and think short and long term and be present right now. That's it.
Thank you. I'll take those on board. I was looking through, obviously, like in preparation for chatting with you today, I was sort of like revisiting your website and your blogs and just, you know, getting reacquainted with what you're doing. And you have like a team. You have quite a large business, or what it would seem from the outside. And yet, like, you do seem to be like walking the talk, in so to speak, like you're like, keep things simple. But it's not like you've removed yourself from the world, or it's not like you live in a hut with a dog and you focus on chopping wood and getting water in order to keep things simple. Like, you're engaging in the online space. You're holding multiple trainings. As I said before, you have a team. You know, thinking about like marrying the idea of being successful in business, yet also living a yogic lifestyle, genuinely, not, you know, not just on the face of things. How have you been successful in doing that?
I would say that it is because I made cultivating sattva at the base of everything. So, for example, you know, some of the folks who moved here to New Zealand with me, they live on the property that they have right now, and then some don't. But that, you know, we start mantras at 5 a.m. We do pranayama and meditation and then asana, and then we have breakfast, and we do that every day. We also practice something called Agnihotra, which is a fire ceremony from the Vedas, and it's a fire ceremony for anyone. It is a yajna, which is an offering, and usually it's a fire, an offering into a fire. And it's a really beautiful practice that we do at sunrise and sunset. And I'd have to say that those things, because I made a decision at some point that was the foundation of my living, and it was the foundation of the business, and that I don't let things get in the way of that. You know, I will very rarely, for example, get on an airplane and miss my practices in the morning. Those kinds of things. So yes, you know, the business is important, but the business is only a result of, it's just an expression of life from that foundation. So yeah, I mean, you know, and I've had people say all kinds of things to me, like, you know, oh, you're too rigid and all this kind of thing. And it's not about rigidness at all. You know, if somebody doesn't feel well, then, you know, you stay in bed. But we live a fairly regular life, you know, and we have regular eating and sleeping times, and it works really well, and we get to have fun, you know. And last Sunday we went to an island in the bay here, you know, so we had about a 45-minute boat ride. We saw bottlenose dolphins and went hiking and took a great picnic with us. And, you know, it's, you know, I'm very honored. I have a great team of people working with me, and we keep in mind what we're doing. You know, in other words, what we're doing is to have Ayurveda and yoga reduce the suffering on the planet. You know, it's just that. So it means, you know, for a lot of people, I think it's easy for me to give up, you know, those old things, though I used to do it that way and that kind of thing. But basically, we take everything and we look at it and say, okay, you know, is this sattva? Is it going to bring us balance and harmony, or is it or not? And make our choices from there. And so, you know, some people, you know, do things, you know, that I don't do, and that kind of thing. And that's all okay too. That's how it happens. And it's really about keeping that spiritual connection, you know, because, oh my goodness, moving a business to a different country and just the banking part alone has been really an education. But, you know, it just is. And there was a time about last August, you know, really, I got pretty upset about all of it. It was just like, oh, this, it just felt like too much, you know. And it was at that moment I needed a little rest. I got some rest. Everything was okay. And I just, you know, I had to put myself back in that place of trust. I got into some fear. It happens. But it doesn't happen for me very often anymore. And also, I don't stay there very long. And that's really what makes a difference. That's where the practices, you know, give us different tools to work with in life. You know, I would, there's a part of me that would love to go live in a cave. But early on, I was told by my Jyotish or Vedic astrologer that you're not going to get to do it, so forget it. So I surrendered to this, and I decided I was going to enjoy it. So,
Myra, could you finish this sentence? If you really knew me, you would know.
How powerful these practices really are. I did a lot of living before I came to Ayurveda and yoga. And the transformation that I've experienced in the last 30 years is really well beyond my imagination. My life is so much better. It's just the inner peace is really what makes a difference, because, you know, Ayurveda and yoga helped me to understand what life was about. It helped me to make life can make sense. It's a process. It's a journey. And sometimes it's really bumpy and it's not very pleasant, but it's a great gift that we have, and we need to enjoy it and maximize it and recognize that we do have these tools available, and we just need to keep turning toward them and use them. And when we do, it gets so great.
Myra, before we go, could you just give us a bit of an update about what you have coming up? Like, I know you're coming to Australia, and you've also got some online things happening as well, in case people are listening at a later date. So could you just like fill us in on what you've got coming up?
Sure. I'm going to be in Australia later this month, actually, and we have some workshops on Ayurveda and yoga for motherhood and around understanding and how to overcome addiction and the Dinacharya, your daily routine. And we also have a workshop for Ayurveda for yoga teachers. And so those are the kinds of things, and we'll be looking at in Melbourne and Sydney, Adelaide and Byron Bay. And we also have our Ayurveda health advisor and health counselor programs, and we have an app that is just about to be released now. So it's Live Ayurveda and Yoga.
And what will that app do?
There's three levels. There's the free entry level, and then there are two paid levels. In the first level, there's recipes that are not in other places. There's cooking classes. There's some of the things that we've had available before in terms of the podcasts and that kind of thing. We have meditation podcast, Spark Your Intuition. And then also there's another level, a professional level, where you can actually work our online programs through that avenue. So you can use a tablet and that. Yeah, yeah. And then we have some trainings coming up. We're doing Marma bodywork training and yoga teacher training and chef training and Ayurveda treatment training. And actually, we have a silent retreat later this year as well.
Cool. Where will that be?
And they're here in the Bay of Islands area, right on the Kerikeri River. We have a lovely spot carved out for that. So,
Myra, and could you just quickly mention the name of your website? Like, if someone's just like wanting to go there right now?
Yes, thanks. Yeah, it's Halepule, HalePule.com. And we're also on Instagram and Facebook.
Cool. Thank you so much for your time and for being so open and generous about sharing your personal journey.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Teaching Yoga. To get full transcripts and links for all of the resources we discuss in this show, get yourself on the newsletter at coragerux.com/newsletter. That's coragerux.com/newsletter. You don't keep it real and you go somewhere but here, cause you know we're only losing control just for a minute. Oh, if you don't like this music, then don't be listening to it. You know I'm just a dude that you know, or something similar. If you don't keep it real, can you go somewhere but here, cause you know we're only losing control just for a minute. Oh, 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 oh.